So Parshas told us, it begins with the story of Yitzchak and Rivka. And there's problems, issues. They don't have any children. They have a gestational tussle. And there's issues with Esav, but Yitzchak doesn't see it. As the boys grew older, Esav and Yaakov began very different paths. And then the parsha shifted to the global picture, to the issues that began to unfold between Yitzchak and his neighbors. And they were not very fond of him. We learned about that yesterday. He dealt with some very fierce anti-Semitism and opposition, and Yitzchak remained focused, and he continued to do that which he set out to do. He's developing the land, and also this has an enormous spiritual implication when we talk about well digging, as we discussed yesterday. And then Yitzchak moves away after he redug the wells of Avram Avinu, and he keeps digging, and he keeps developing. And what happens? What happens is, at the end of chapter 26, is that as Yitzchak continues to enjoy remarkable success, Hashem assures him that everything will be well, and his neighbors, Avimelech and Fichel, Sar Tzvoi, the chief of staff named Fichel, they come and they want to meet Yitzchak. And Yitzchak is less than friendly to them. He says, "You hate me. Why should I meet with you?" And they sue for peace. Not out of weakness and compromise, but out of strength and tenacity and fortitude. He says, "We won't bother you. You don't bother us." And that lands us in the fifth reading of Parshas Toldos. So we're near the very end of chapter 26. Pick it up from verse 30. So after they sued for peace, they made a pact. He made them a meal. They did the Jewish thing. They ate and drank. Why did he make them a meal? Radak says, this would be something that nurtures or cultivates the good feelings between them. You know, when you break bread, it's effective. It brings people together. And that's how the night ended. Vayashkimu vaboiker, Yitzchak's guests stayed overnight. Vayishavu ish le'achiv. One swore or took an oath to the other. So I guess the farbrengen was effective, because when they finished having the big meal and the eating in the morning, they were actively engaged in this peacemaking, in this deal making. They made oaths to one another. Yitzchak sent them off. They went. But they did not go in angst and frustration, but rather b'shalom. They went in peace. Who swore to who? It says ish la'achiv. So the Hamekdavar says, the Torah doesn't emphasize they swore to one another, because it wasn't just about Avimelech and Yitzchak. Ultimately, all of the ministers, all of the senior officials, the government officials, all participated in this. See, sometimes you make a deal, you make a commitment with the magistrate or leader or dictator or whatever you want to call it, who says everybody else is going to go along with it. That's the lunacy of the supposed so-called peace process today. What if you would get even the leader, the elected leader who is elected for 4 years, who's serving his 12th or 15th year of his four-year term? What even if you would get that leader, who is barely a leader and barely has any control, what would it mean? It would mean nothing. Because this is a place, a part of the world, where people don't necessarily rally around the leader. And there's little fiefdoms and little sheikhs and these little pockets. So here, everybody swore. And then what happens? Vayashkimu, they woke up in the morning, vayishalchem. Radak says the word vayishalchem, he sent them off, does not connote some kind of negativity. Get out of here, see if I can get rid of you. But rather, the idea of Leviya, that Yitzchak walked his guests, they became like guests. And just like we learned several weeks ago, the most important part of Abrahamic hospitality is the escort. Yitzchak escorted them. So on the contrary, they left on really good terms. They're like special guests. Yitzchak's walking them home. And they left in peace. Hamakdavar says, this is even more than they bargained for. in the oath, they said, we will not harm or hurt you. But in fact, this is not only a question of not harming and not hurting, but it was even more so, they left in peace. And so it was, on this very day, that Yitzchak's external struggles seemed to have come to an end, that his enemies stopped trying to harm him, that Yitzchak's detractors have come to sue for peace. It was on that very day, says the Torah in verse 32, Vayehi b'yoimahu, on this day, a wonderful premonition, a sign of good things, Vayavoyu avdei Yitzchak, the servants of Yitzchak came, Vayagidu lei, and they told him, Aloides ha-be'er asher chafaru, on a new well that had been dug. And this seemed like a really challenging and difficult well, because they said, we've been digging and digging, and they said, we hit pay dirt. We found water. This is a big deal. We found water. They came and they told him, and they were excited to share this. The Malbim says, maybe it wasn't such a hard well to dig. Maybe they anticipated digging for a very long time, and instead of having to dig for a very long time, it was incredible. Very quickly, the well seemed to open up almost, and they hit water. Either way, there was an excitement. We got water. This is working. So they came to tell Yitzchak, and this seems like almost like a sign and approbation. Vayikra Oisa Shiva. He calls this well seven. Alshem Ha'ir, Be'er Sheva. This is the same idea of the city, well of seven. Ad Hayem Hazeh, until this very day. So what's Bayemahu? It says, Vayi Bayemahu, it was on that day. And then Yitzchak calls it, and it's Ad Hayem Hazeh. So the Ramban says, Bayemahu tells you, as soon as Avimelech and his people left, almost instantaneously, right after, they said, we have news. It's wonderful. Found water. So he called it Shiva. Why did he call it Shiva? Rashi says, Al Shem HaBris. This followed on the heels of a covenant. And the covenant was created through an oath. So that oath that was created, that covenant, now became the inspiration for the name of this remarkable well that uncovered itself so quickly, so surprisingly. The Sepharno says, this is actually the seventh well. The seventh well Yitzchak dug, which is a pretty interesting concept, because the seventh generation is dear and the number seven is cherished. And this is the seventh well. So we have this idea that on the seventh, this is the seventh well they dug. It's like some kind of completion, like 7 days a week and so on and so forth. And it's based on the name of Be'er Sheva. Now this is interesting, because who names the city? Who names the city? It seems like Yitzchak names the city. That's what the Torah says. But this is not the first time we're hearing of Be'er Sheva. We heard about Be'er Sheva many times. In fact, Avram Avinu lived in Be'er Sheva. The two major cities of Avram's dwelling was in Hebron and Be'er Sheva, respectively. Yitzchak called the name Be'er Sheva. So we have a number of different answers or explanations of what the Torah means here. The Ibn Ezra maintains that Avraham Avinu did indeed call it Be'er Sheva, and he said that Yitzchak also called it Be'er Sheva, and it was reflective of both of their experiences. With Avraham Avinu they sued for peace, with Yitzchak they sued for peace. So therefore Yitzchak called the name Be'er Sheva by virtue not only of his father's activities or successes, but his own too. So almost like he affirmed or ratified the name. The Radak says, it's a different city. It's not the same Be'er Sheva. Avraham Avinu lived in his Be'er Sheva, and Yitzchak lived in his. And we would have to presume that the city of Be'er Sheva today is the second one. Because the second one is where it says, Al Shem Ha'ir, the name of the city, Be'er Sheva, Ad Hayem Hazeh. So it would seem like that's the permanent one. The second one, the one that lasted the test of time, is Yitzchak's Be'er Sheva. Radak says, truth be told, it doesn't have to be a separate city, even though that's his original answer. His second answer is, maybe it is the same city. So why do you say Yitzchak called it Be'er Sheva, Avram called it Be'er Sheva? He says, simple. In the days of Yitz and Avram Avinu, who called it Be'er Sheva? Avram called it Be'er Sheva. Maybe Avram's people. But the name didn't catch. Didn't stick. It wasn't something that was part of what we're going to call popular culture. But after Yitzchak, and after Yitzchak's oath, then everybody said, oh, yeah, indeed. So Yitzchak, in a sense, affirmed or ratified their name, Be'er Sheva. And the Sefarno notes that in Avram Avinu's time, it's called Be'er Sheva. It's called Be'er Sheva. And that's only because of the Shavua, only because of the oath. But in Yitzchak's time, it's not called Be'er Sheva, it's called Be'er Sheva. Sheva means the number seven. And he says that's because for Yitzchak, this was the seventh well, which represented a great moment of completion. It's like he turned the point, turned the corner. He reached the point, he reached the destination. He dug seven wells in the Holy Land. And therefore, the name of the city ultimately is not Be'er Sheva, which is only something that invokes the concept of the peace or pact that was created, but rather that this idea of Be'er Sheva represents Yitzchak's efforts and the way it reaches its fruition or completion, which, as I said, is very interesting because we have this famous medrash of Kol HaShvi'in Chaviven, all sevenths are dear, and the seventh represents bringing everything to fruition. So this is what it's all about. And that's what we call the Be'er Sheva. With this, the story of Yitzchak's challenges, external challenges, come to an end. And in some ways, Yitzchak's challenges come to an end. Yitzchak struggles as does his father Avram before him. But from this point and onward, his struggles seem to subside. Yitzchak Avinu at this point goes blind, and he essentially becomes a hermit. He doesn't go outside. He's no longer engaged and involved in the comings and goings of the outside world. In his stead, Yaakov is now going to rise to prominence. And here, an enormous, thorny, and difficult issue begins to develop. Namely, the challenge of Yaakov versus Esav. So the Torah at this point introduces Esav. All we know is that he's a hunter. All we know is that he's clever. We have an allusion to the notion of his deception. Verse 34, from the external challenges that have closed, we now return to the inner family dynamic and strife. Vayihi Esav ben arboim shono. Esav, Esau, the eldest son of Yaakov, is now 40 years old. Vayikach Isha, he takes a wife, he gets married. This is a big deal. We haven't had a Yiddish simcha in many decades. I'm not so sure what kind of Yiddish simcha that marriage was, because the bride didn't come from a fine Jewish family. But Esav said she converted. She's joining the Jewish people. In fact, he gave her a nice Jewish name. He called her Yehudit. Wow, that's a great name. Yehudit, Jewess. Bas Be'eri, daughter of Be'eri, Achiti. And then there was this other woman that he married, which right here we see a flag go up. Polygamy is never a preferred option. Avraham Avinu was polygamous, not because he wanted to be, but because Sarah kind of pushed him into it. It was never what he looked for. Yaakov got stuck being polygamous. He made a promise to Rachel. Instead, by accident, he was hoodwinked into marrying Leah, so then he had to go back to Rachel. Then his wives wanted Bilhah and Zilpah. But Esav, to begin with, he had a double wedding. He had Yehudis and Basmas Bas Elon Hachiti, which is not her real name either, but he called her Besamim. He called her his Jewish spice girl. And he got married. And the Torah says this marriage did not bring much happiness to Yitzchak and Rivka. Verse 35, Atihiyena Meiras Ruach Li Yitzchak Ule Rivka. This brought great distress. It aggrieved greatly Yitzchak and Rivka. No Yiddish and Nachas here. Let's take a look at Rashi now. Yitzchak has been Arboim, Esav has been Arboim Shon. Why does the Torah tell us how old Esav was? Number one. Number two, Esav was sexually active at a very young age. He was a rapist, basically. So why did he get married at 40? What was up with that? Says Rashi, Esav, Hoyo, Esav was likened to Nimshalachazir. He's like the pig. chazer. What's a chazer? The chazer, as it says in Tehillim, shenemer yichar semeno chazer miyoher, the chazer, the pig, comes out of the forest. And this is, incidentally, a mashal, a metaphor for the grandson of Esav, whose name is Amalek. And the chazer is just like Esav. Why is he like a pig? Hachazer hazeh, kishu sheikha, this chazer, when he lies down or crouches, poshet tulofov, he spreads his hooves, and he shows you his hooves, leimer, as if to say, ru'u, I need tar, look at this. Get the kosher signs. Split hooves. That's the pig. But really, he's not kosher. Why? Because the inner sign he doesn't have, but externally, he presents himself as such. Kach, so to elu alufei Esav, these are the generations of Esav, Goizlin, the Chimsin, they rob, they plunder. Marim, atzmo pshedim, but they don't tell everybody that behavior. They are deceptive. They create a smoke screen. They make themselves as if they're fine, as if they have integrity, as if they're upright citizens. Kol arboim shana, all 40 years, I presume not from his early childhood, but basically, Esav's whole life, hayatzad nashim, Esav was the ultimate, shall we say, Mr. Promiscuous. That's what he was. And he was sweet-talking woman, and he was having affairs, and doing all kinds of things. But it wasn't just, he didn't prey on single girls. He preyed on married women. Mitachas ba'aleim, from literally or figuratively, underneath their husbands. Uma'ana isim, he would sexually abuse them. He was a predator. Kishoye ben mem, when he turned 40, he said, oh, I'm like father. I'm very righteous. Omar, he said, Abba ben mem shona nasa isha. Father married when he was 40. I have to do the same. Afani kein, I will do the same. So I will do the same means I also get married just like Yitzchak's 40. That must be the Jewish age for marriage. But Yitzchak never knew this because Esav covered it up. He would come and ask halacha questions about arcane details, things which nobody could think of or seem would care about. Yitzchak knew he was a wild man, but he didn't realize the depth of his spiritual depravity. This is Esav. But Esav's wives bring great grief to Yitzchak and Rivka. Rashi says, Lashon hamras ruach. This is a terminology that indicates a deep disturbance or ruination of spirit. Like mamre meyisim, rebellious were you. Kol ma'aseim, everything these women did was lahachas l'itzav and Yitzchak l'rifka. They did it in a way which was spiteful and hurtful to Yitzchak and Rivka. Why? Yitzchak and Rivka, the greatest of tzaddikim, served Hashem. And these women, they would worship idols. And they would do so in the presence of Yitzchak and Rivka. And this is a very painful situation. So what do? Your son gets married to a girl you don't like. You swallow hard. What are you going to do? Still your son. So Rivka said, I'm over. Forget about it. But Yitzchak couldn't bring himself to that. Yitzchak continues to try to reach Esav as he is the proverbial well digger. So let's talk about this business of dealing with deception. Esav is the master of deception. Esav seeks to deceive everybody. Page Shin Mem Vav. Simen Chav Vav. It's the equivalent of page 346, chapter 26. The Rebbe tells us, with regard to this concept of Esav being the master of deception, that there is a maimer from the Alter Rebbe. It's a book of Memorim called Memorim HaKtzarim, or short, synoptic Memorim. So in that book of Memorim HaKtzarim, there is a synoptic teaching, a short teaching from the Alter Rebbe. And in that teaching, the Alter Rebbe says the following. Sheyeshna hevdel, that there is a world of difference. Bein birurei v'zichuchai shel Esav. When we talk about this idea of Esav having to be refined, Esav having to be developed, ayidei Yaakov, by virtue of Yaakov's efforts. Lebirurei v'zichuchai shel Lavan, to Yaakov Avinu's struggle and challenges and efforts with Lavan, with Laban. Now Lavan, Hoya Ramai. Laban was a master of deception, a liar, a cheater. Promised one thing, violates his word. It's a horrible guy. Vayatzarach is Gabir Olav. Yaakov Avinu had to deal with him. And he wasn't an easy character to deal with. How do you deal with deception? You fight fire with fire, that's how. Yaakov had to be cunning in return. He had to be able to overcome Esav's challenges or Lavan's challenges, knowing that Laban was a master of deception. Yaakov had to deal with it. And that was Bederech Mirma, using all kinds of clever approaches. His chakmus, his cunning. And with his cunning, he beat Laban at his own game. Okay. That took a long time. Lochein nimshach ha-mavak negdei zman rab. This is why Yaakov Avinu had to lock horns with Esav for a very long time. With Lavan. However, Esav lo mazois. When it comes to Esav, on the other hand, Esav did not deceive. Esav did not lie. He did not make himself out to be somebody else. Heres kavanasa yarob goli. He showed his evil, baleful intention right up front. He did not hide the cards that he was dealing. He was very, very straightforward. I hate you, Yaakov. I want to eliminate you. I want to be the progenitor of the Jewish people. I will be the heir to Yitzchak. So, when you know what you're dealing with, when you know who you're dealing with, it's not as difficult. Yaakov is victorious fairly swiftly. Like the challenges that our brothers and sisters have in Israel today. When their enemies were open, it was an open and clear warfare. Everything was revealed and obvious. They went to war. Hashem's miracles ensued. And in 6 days, we reconquered most of Eretz Yisrael. Now we're dealing with masters of deception. Arafat Yimach Shemoy is the biggest charlatan in the world. We're taking one thing to his, to the people, the Arab people in Arabic, he would say one thing. He would say another thing to world bodies. He would say another thing to the Israeli government. And they continue to perpetuate that legacy of lying and cheating. And it's like impossible. It's impossible. Because it's so hard to deal with an enemy who's not upfront. And the amazing thing is they are even upfront, but everything in a deceptive manner. And it's so delusional. The people who are dealing with them continue to delude themselves into thinking that the deception they present might have some kind of truth to it. And that's not easy to overcome. That's very difficult. Alpize, based on this principle, or a matrix, Mevayrat Mura Zarkin as a Sibyl Arichza Galus, the Rebbe explains, that's why this galut is taking so long. Ki gam ha-galut, this galut, this exiles, ba'ifin shahara, unister u'machase es atzmai. Evil oftentimes does not manifest itself in an open fashion. Very often it's subtle. Especially in today's day and age of moral relativism, in today's day and age of leftist fundamentalism, where the anti-Semitism is couched in terminology of human rights, couched in terminology of tzedek v'yesher, of goodness, of fairness, and so on and so forth. Very hard to deal with. Very difficult. Kigam ha-golos, when the golos is like the Kamayim Razal, this is in keeping, or similar to the teaching of our sages found in Masechet Yoma, on the 9th page, that it says, Deiris Rishonim, the early generations, Nizgalu Avoinam, their sin, their iniquity was open and obvious, Nizgalu Kitzam, there was an end in sight. Aval Deiris Acharenim, the later generation, Leinis Galu Avoinam, their sins are not open and overt. Oh, Leinis Galu, the end is not in sight. This seems to be an endless, challenging, difficult set of circumstances. That's what the Alter Rebbe says. The Rebbe says, L'chayra hadavar any movement. This is not understood at all. After all, in Torah parlance, Hagolus Hanechich is the present Golus, is Golus Edoim. This is the Golus of Edom. You said Edom is Esav. You said Esav was easy. Laban was hard. Laban was deceptive. It took Yaakov 21 years. Esav was a straight-up confrontation. And end of the story. Moved on. But this Golus is Edom. And Alter Rebbe explained that why is the Golus taking so long? Because of the deception. But L'divrei Admor HaZaken, according to the teaching of the Alter Rebbe, Birurei Shel Esav Nasa B'Zman Katzer. The challenges with Esav being able to overcome Esav happens very quickly. It's 1, 2, 3. So then if that case, then the present galut should also be very short, swift. It's Esav. So the Rebbe answers via Shleimar that the likely answer to this is Shahasiba Nautza Bekach, that the reason is rooted in this idea Esav was indeed a master of deception, a man of many disguises, a person who had multiple personalities. Esav was one way biyachas liYitzchak Aviv. He was one way to his father Yitzchak. Ubiyachas, a second way, was how he related to liYaakov Achiv, to Jacob his brother. So the Esav in a dealing a relationship with Isaac is not the same Esav in his dealing a relationship with Jacob. Biyachasay shall Esav liYankiv, in the relationship, if you want to call it that, of Yaakov and Esav. Omnom ulo histeris kavanosav. Esav was very forthright. No deception. He said to him straight up, I want you dead. Out of my way. V'yotza kenegdei b'mechama gluya. He attacked him overtly, openly. No deception, no secrets, no camouflage. This is straight up. So therefore, Yaakov knows what he's dealing with. You have an enemy who identifies himself. The enemy who comes in uniform. This is called symmetrical warfare. Yaakov can overcome him very, very quickly. Aval biyachas eli Yitzchak. His yachas, his connection to Yitzchak. Very complicated. Leizu b'vad she'esav isnaig b'mirma. Not only was Esav deceptive. Elahu af asa zeis b'efen chomer. He did this in a very, very severe way. Here, he was more cunning, more deceptive, more complicated, even than Laban the Aramite, who is usually the paradigm of deception, lies and cheating. What happened? Rama usay shalavan, the deception of Lavan manifested itself as such, shehistir es harasha by Mipnei Yaakov. He never told Jacob openly, I hate you, I'm out to get you. He said, I want the best for you. I'm doing you a favor. this is a gift. Yaakov says, what are you talking about? Oh, yes, no, I have nothing against you. This was very difficult. But one thing Esav Lavan never tried to do. He never tried to tell Yaakov that I'm a chassid. He didn't try that. Lavan knew that he's not a chassid. He's the opposite. He's a wild man. An idolater, a cheater, a liar. He said, Yaakov, to you, I'm good. My son-in-law, why wouldn't it be nice to my son-in-law, my nephew? He didn't make himself to be somebody he wasn't. He just didn't show his cards. When he was out to deceive Yaakov, he did exactly that. He tried to deceive him. But Esav is much worse. When Esav deceived his father, Yitzchak, he didn't just say to Yitzchak, I'm here to destroy your legacy. I'm here to knock down the building you're trying to build. No. He did much worse. Esav, histir es harashabai. Not only did Esav conceal the evil that lurked in his heart, ela afnisa lahavlit eskashrusai. Esav was trying to sow a new narrative. He was weaving a narrative of Esav the chassid, Esav the pious. He said, I'm kosher, I'm suitable, I'm prepared, I'm ready. I'm tzidkasi, I'm a righteous person. As Rashi said, like who? Like the chazir. Kishu sheichav, he crouches. He doesn't show you how he's chewing, but he's busy portraying his big split hooves. Ru'u, as if to say, see, I need tahor, I am pure. Al pizeh, now that we understand this, we understand the reason la'riches galus, galus edem, the galus, the final galus. Ki kedei levatlas rama usi shel Esav, in order to overcome the lies, the cheating, the deception of Esav, yesh tzedek ba'avoyda rabba, this is very difficult, my friends. You need to really toil and struggle. Oid yoyser mizu, hanachutza libatla rama es shalavim. This is far more complicated and difficult and challenging, even than overcoming the Laban. Shekein Rama Usei Shel Esav, because the cheating, deception, lying, it camouflaging of intention for Esav, hichamura, much more severe. Mituchkemes, much more cunning, much, much more so than Lavan. And that is why, my friends, it's taking so long. And if I may conclude, this is a perfect description of what's going on in the world today. Mm-hmm. The anti-Semites are accusing everybody else of anti-Semitism. The anti-Semites, with all of their evil intention toward Israel, the whole extreme leftist fundamental world, that leftist fundamentalism that supports BDS and supports terrorism and supports Islamofascism and talks about human rights and talks about peace and talks about togetherness and brotherhood and talks about ideas like multiculturalism, melting pot, the cacophony of voices and everybody falling into step together, the lunacy of a prime minister who sits and praises a monster in the name of righteousness. This, my dear friends, is what we deal with today, and that is the most difficult and challenging kind of golos of all. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give us the koyach to deal with this mass deception, to uncover, unmask it for what it really is, and Emir Tzashem, to be zeicha, finally, to the conclusion of golos, the coming of Mashiach b'mheira, will be Amenu. Amen.